The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for this week's Know Your Foe episode with Marcus Johnson from the Raiders side. Marcus, how you doing?
Good, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
No complaints here other than that first horrible loss to the Chiefs. I'm sure the Raiders were no more happy with it than the Ravens were.
Yeah.
But it is great to have you. Good to see some new people on this show. And tell us a little bit about where your work is, for starters, and what podcasts you do and whatnot.
Yeah. So my work, I do a podcast, kind of a film show podcast called Tape Don't Lie. It's with my partner, Matt Holder. We basically do film breakdowns. He does defense. I do offense. And then, you know, and there's a film channel altogether on YouTube that's on audio. And then we do some other shows, too, that I kind of mix it in. We do more fun show on Fridays called Friday Night Live. And, of course, we react to every Raiders game after the game. And you can find me on Twitter at TheMarkJohnNFL. Also, I do some writing for SB Nation, Silver and Black Pride, too. So you can definitely check me out there as well if you're into that. And I'll be doing some Ravens previews, Ravens versus Raiders previews this week. And then, of course, I do another podcast, too, called A Little Pocket Awareness. We talk about mostly audio that we do talk about quarterbacks and go in depth into the quarterbacks of the week and what we saw, what we didn't like and whatever. And so, yeah, just a deep dive into a lot of football. I do a lot of football stuff, man. And yeah, so a lot of background. I went to the Scouting Academy and kind of put the work in to kind of get here. So, yeah, it's a lot of football, man. I'm a big football guy. I love it. All the NFL. I'm not just Raiders all the time, but it's my main focus for sure.
All right. We really appreciate you coming on. Very much respect the Scouting Academy people. Michael Crawford, if you know him, at Abukari here on the Baltimore side, a big and a regular friend of this show, went through that, and appreciate you coming on. So anyway, let's talk about the Raiders a little bit, their biggest offseason moves, acquisitions, other changes, any key injuries. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so the main move they had was Christian Wilkins. I mean, Christian Wilkins is the main move. People would say they overpaid him, but after watching this last game, I would say that they didn't overpay him. I thought he was excellent, but that was their main signing. They brought in some other players, like Cody Whitehair and Alex Madison, just more role players, I would say. But they re-signed a lot of the guys from last year, like John Jenkins, they re-signed. Amir Abdullah, they re-signed. And a lot of players like that really didn't go too in-depth in the free agency, and then most of it went to the draft. So like Brock Bowers was a big addition. That was a very surprising player that they ended up adding. Most people were expecting to go tackle, but they ended up going Brock Bowers, who was the best, probably the best player available, and that's something that Tom Telesco likes to do. So it was not the longest offseason, or I would say like the most in-depth offseason you would see from most teams, especially with how much cap room they have, because they still have about $34 million left and they really haven't spent most of it. So maybe you're expecting them to maybe do some contracts or something like that. I think one guy they were looking to maybe do a long-term contract with was Malcolm Kuntz, but then he ended up getting hurt. So we don't know how that's going to work. And they might have to wait till the end of the year to do that. And then, but other than that, man, there really wasn't any big moves the Raiders made. It was mostly Christian Wilkins. But I really felt like that he was like their missing piece on defense. And you really saw at the last game that how big of an impact he makes.
So I'm looking at the Raiders apparently have about $78 million in cap room next year. So 34 this year, 78 next year. And then they'll get a roll of the 34 if they do anything. I don't think that's included in that 78 number. So that could be a very large number for the Raiders next year.
Yeah, a large number. And, you know, you were thinking that maybe they're trying to go after a quarterback because, I mean, that's the biggest position they don't have right now, just in case they, you know, they mess around and finish like 8-9 or, you know, something like that. And then you can't be in that position to get the quarterback that you want very high, that you might have to go out and pay one and try to find it that way. You know, there are maybe, you know, people were like talking about Dak Prescott, but then he got the big money right before the game on Sunday. So that kind of went out the window. So it's interesting to see how much what they're going to do with all that cap next year. Like, is they're going to just totally build the team up and maybe try to see what they can do this year, go after a quarterback, maybe trade for one, something like that. Because there's not that many quarterbacks that are available. I think maybe Matthew Stafford might be available. Maybe that's about it. I don't know who else is going to be there for them to really put a lot of money into to have that big a cap space. But it is something interesting for sure.
Stafford kind of a band-aid too at this point in his career. You're not looking to build your franchise around that guy. You're looking to try and win now with him. It doesn't seem like the right move. If you've got that much cap room and you're getting to start from scratch, you might really want to organically grow some players if you have that option. Now, we're in Baltimore. We're very spoiled, I'll just say, because we've always had more players than we can afford to pay. And actually, people are just, you know, they cry about it and they whine about it and losing Matthew Judon and other players that had to walk. But the truth of the matter is the other side of that coin is a lot dirtier in terms of what the Bears have had to do, in terms of what a lot of really bankrupt franchises have had to do in terms of talent.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders, I mean, especially with the Raiders haven't had that type of, you know, players that we're mad that they went away, right? Max Crosby is probably the best player. They found ways to retain him. Like, maybe they're trying to give him a new contract next year. I mean, that might be coming up to kind of re-extend him. But it's just maybe they want to keep the defensive core, and maybe that's why they're trying to build up the cap space. But they got to use that on somebody. I mean, you figure that they go get some bigger free agents. Tom Telesco is a big spender. I mean, that's one thing that he did with the Chargers is he spends a lot of money. He's not scared of it. I mean, they maybe even overpaid Gardner Minshew a little bit too when they picked him up. So he's willing to overpay for some guys just to bring him in. So, I mean, you expect some kind of big movement with that much cap space, but you would like them to bring in a young quarterback and not go after a veteran like that. But, you know, Antonio Pierce and those guys want to win right away. So we'll see.
That's some, obviously, we don't have to go back to Jamarcus Russell and talk about how new quarterbacks have worked out always, but it's a gamble either way, I guess, but I really don't like the free agent quarterback route. I hate it. Going out and getting a player like Deshaun Watson was fraught with perils that the Browns didn't even perceive about the situation. I'm not talking about like his legal troubles, and I'm talking about him just being a little bit older when he's starting the contract, and then the problems that accrue with injuries and whatnot from there. So,
yeah, for sure.
All right, let's talk Gardner Minshew. Of course, the Ravens are familiar with, Ravens fans too, because he played for the Colts last year in Week 3, delivered them a pretty devastating emotional loss anyway, in terms of an overtime game lost at home. But a game that Minshew played reasonably well in. He was sacked 3 times by Hamilton. What's different about his game this year, or what are his strengths and weaknesses? Maybe we start there.
Yeah. I think with Gardner Minshew, he's not too much different from last year. I think one thing that stands out with him is that, I mean, he's kind of a gutsy player. Like, it's more he's going to try to make some plays, do those type of things. Those are really more of his strengths at this point. I mean, it's to be honest, since he's more of a backup quarterback, in my opinion, and the Raiders are really have a backup quarterback kind of starting. And I mean, that's when, you know, he played the Ravens last year. He came in as a backup for Anthony Richardson. It wasn't him being the starter and being named the starter like he was with the Raiders. So there's a lot of issues that you see with a normal backup quarterback, which, I mean, there'd be some good plays, but there'd be a lot of plays that just show that he's not a starter full time, or why he hasn't been there. Just missing some guys downfield, missing some reads. And I think sometimes he doesn't really trust what he sees, and his arm strength is a little, I would say, on the lower end of NFL quarterbacks in the NFL. And, you know, so sometimes he can't fit balls in certain windows. And, you know, sometimes players are getting hurt, like what happened to Michael Pittman last year. Those things happen with Gardner Minshew. So, you know, when it comes to him, he is an accurate quarterback. I will give him that. I mean, he's pretty accurate. He was very accurate this last game, especially in the intermediate part of the field. I thought he did really well there. It's just him being consistently pushing the ball downfield is something that we don't see a lot.
I want to talk about that just for a second, because the Ravens have a defense which looks starts in a too high shell an awful lot. They really show that to opponents. They rotate out of it. They do robber concepts. They do some matchup zone on each side of the field and whatnot. But the thing we've seen from some of the weaker arm quarterbacks, with Burrow being the big one, is that they really can't throw deep against the Ravens. They won't even try a lot of the times. Everything becomes a dump off check down, because they're afraid to throw the ball deep. And Burrow threw the ball in the first game or second game. I think it was the first game, 7 times down the field, 0 for 7, 1 interception with, obviously no yards in there, but yeah. 0 for 7 with interception. I was wondering, has Minshew shown the same aversion to throwing deep, or is he just not particularly good at it?
I think it's more of an aversion, in my opinion, at this point. In the preseason, I think that's why he won the job over O'Connell, because O'Connell was being very dink and dunk and kind of just not showing the aggressiveness that you would like to see in the way they want to play football, because, you know, they want to be a defensive football team with explosive passing plays. I mean, and that's what they're looking for in between both those quarterbacks during that quarterback battle. But we saw a little bit of a struggle there with Aiden O'Connell. He wouldn't push the ball down the field. You saw Gardner Minshew. But when you get to the games, it kind of went back to how it was with the Colts, where he's not pushing the ball downfield. There's a couple times we had Trey Tucker. He had this play where it was a double dig with Davante Adams and Trey Tucker. And, you know, the Chargers were all over Davante Adams. So every time Adams came around, the safeties were just driving on him right away. I was calling it Davante quarters during my breakdown. It's not really quarters, it's Davante quarters. So
boxing one, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? So like they're going right at him, and some guys, you know, winning over the top, but those guys driving on Davante, then maybe you could hit Trey Tucker over the top, and he just wasn't willing to do it. And he would just check it down a little bit. So, you know, it's probably going to be the same, especially with the safeties that the Ravens have and Kyle Hamilton roaming out there. I think he might be a little bit nervous about trying to make mistakes and trying to make sure this defense, you know, keep them in the game and avoid turnovers. But, you know, they do need him to be more aggressive. I think so. They got to find ways for that to happen. If that's not going to work, then they might have to go to Aiden O'Connell earlier than they expected, if he's not going to throw the ball down the field. So I think it's his ADOT this week was like the lowest in the league at 4.5 or something like that. And that's not going to work in the NFL, you know, especially with the arm talent that he is and the way type of quarterback he is. That's not going to work when you're just dinking and dunking like that and you're not really taking chances. You're not going to win a lot of games. So, he's got to find a way to start attacking, but it's going to be difficult for him, because, I mean, like I said, the Ravens like to switch it up and they're going to show a lot of different looks, and Kyle Hamilton is everywhere, and he's going to be trying to look at get some picks this week from Gardner Minshew.
All right, let's go to the offensive line. Take us left to right across the line and talk about each of them.
Yeah, so Colton Miller, I think he's one of the most underrated left tackles in football. I think he's been, for like 2022, 2023, I thought he was a top 10 tackle for most of the year. I thought he goes up against the best and plays really well. He does have some issues sometimes he can let people inside his chest, and the best way to beat him is through the bull rush, right? But if you're not a real strong guy, it takes like a Khalil Mack, those type of guys, to really get him pushed in there. But if you're not a real strong guy, he's so big. He's 6'7". He's a huge guy. You're not going to be able to just push him over. He's a pretty good anchor, too. So he's a stud out there at the left tackle. I think he's one of my favorite best players on the Raiders altogether. And I think he's a staple out there as a left tackle. He's coming back off an injury, though. So he had a little bit of struggles, especially against Khalil Mack this last week. It's a shoulder injury. So he had a shoulder injury that he had to have surgery in over the offseason. It really affected him last year, too. He had to sit out a couple games. He missed the Chiefs game last year. And he came in relief in the Colts game. But, yeah, he had shoulder surgery. I think it was his left shoulder. He had to have shoulder surgery on, so that he was dealing with that. And he basically missed all of camp because of that.
Is he wearing a harness now, or is he out of any harness?
He's still wearing a harness. A harness. So you can see, if you're watching him play, he has this big thing on his arm. Yeah, he's wearing a harness right now, so he is dealing with that. But he did still had a pretty good game. He was solid last week in his first game back off that injury. Now, interior is what it gets a little tricky here, because Cody Whitehair is a starter right now, just because Jackson Powers Johnson, who was second round pick, he is the starter, probably a left guard for them. And he's dealing with some kind of illness, but I think he's going to find a way to play this week. And that's going to help the whole offensive line, because Jack Sparks Johnson, he's just a monster in the run game. And that's what the Raiders really needed. And that's what they missed against the Chargers, is that type of player that can just maul people and likes to maul people. You know, I like my linemen really mean. I like those guys being angry. So yeah, there's definitely something that I really like about him.
Uh-huh. I love JPJ in this last draft. I did think he would be more valuable to a team at center than at guard. Transition to guard been easy for him? Or, I mean, you've only really seen him in the preseason, I assume, at this point, right?
No, we really didn't get to see him in the preseason either. He missed all of camp, too. He missed all of camp, most of camp, too, as well. And then going into the first game, he was wearing a red non-contact jersey. So he's having some kind of concussion issue that he was having. So we really haven't seen him at left guard. He hasn't played guard since, like, I think his sophomore year or freshman year in college. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with that draft pick, I think it is because Andre James, who I'll get to next, he is so hit and miss at center. Right. And the way his contract's set up, that they can kind of get out of that contract by next year, I can see JPJ moving to center next season. And that will kind of be the move that I think they might make going into 2025. But for 2024, he's playing left guard right now. And then you get to Andre James, and Andre James is so hit and miss. Andre James will be really good one game, and the next game he is really bad. So he's never has that middle, in my opinion. So, like, you'll see his PFF grade, you'll go look at him, and you're like, okay, maybe this guy's a pretty good center, but it's just so hit and miss with him. And he's a pretty good pass protector. It's just in the run game, he doesn't get a lot of push because he doesn't have a lot of play strength. So when he's not able to get that push that you would like from a center, right? And then he has a lot of slow snaps too, because he was converted from tackle to center by one of my least favorite offensive line coaches, Tom Cable, who that was his grand idea to move him from right tackle to center. He loves doing that. He did that with Jason Britt too. So he moved in there, so his snaps are a little bit slower and those type of things. And you'd rather see maybe, Jack Sparks Johnson play center a little earlier. But, I mean, he's under contract. He signed a contract that, you know, you expect him to be the starting center. But I think there's going to be some struggles there with him, especially learning a new scheme. They're moving more to a zone scheme. He was in a power scheme with Josh McDaniels, even though he was drafted for his own scheme. And he has the athleticism for it. You saw him struggle a little bit this past game. And then if you get to the other side, you got Dylan Parham, who I was so mad at Josh McDaniels because he played right guard his whole career at Memphis for the most part. And he played a little right tackle. But they decided he was a left guard, and he was struggling his first 2 years a little bit. He got better year two, but, you know, he played one game at right guard as a rookie, and he was almost lights out against the Chargers. I think it was 22-2, the week one against Chargers, played really well. And he had another good game this past week against Chargers week one, playing right guard again. So I think that's the right position for him. He plays really well there. He has great hands, great technique. He has a little bit of a play strength issue too, but his technique is so good. His feet are always set correctly, great hands inside, quick hands, gets his hands up really quick. And he could play center too. So if there's any problems with Andre James, and, you know, they don't want to move Jackson Powers Johnson to center, Parham can play center as well. And then when he's played center, he's actually played pretty well.
So at right guard in particular, he'll go up against two of the Ravens' best linemen in terms of Matt Ibike, and then possibly also Travis Jones if we see him at the three some this week. Is who did Dylan Parham face this week in terms of the Chargers? Who was his primary opponent?
Mostly Puna Ford and Tuli. I can't even say his last name.
Tuli Pelotu?
Yeah, Tuli Pelosi. Okay. Yes. Okay.
All right. So kind of a different level. He's a good game, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. And I'll say he has struggled against elite players. That's probably my biggest thing with Dylan Parham. Against like the solid defense tackle, even above average, he looks really good. But like he plays like Chris Jones or like the better defense tackles in football, he's really struggled. So this could be a really a big test for him to see what he could do, you know, going against the Ravens players. Cause Matt Ibike and those guys are a lot, I would say, higher level than a Puna Ford or even a Tuli. So yeah, seeing Parham this week is going to be a big test for me, because I that's what I want to see. I want to see him be good against elite players. I've seen enough of him being good against a solid player. I want to see him be good against the elite.
All right. Very good. Let's move on to, let's talk about the tight ends first. Obviously the draft was kind of the Ravens, kind of the Raiders in the sense that Bowers was left. Definitely a lot of people didn't think he'd last that long, right?
Mm-mm. No, they did not. That's why the Raiders took him. They were pretty in shock about that. The Raiders were in shock that he is there. I remember watching the Giants Hard Knocks. They had him as a top 10 player. So it was very shocking to see him there. But yeah, he fits the bill. You know, the Raiders needed to hit on a first round pick. I don't remember the last time they have. So for them to even take him and just watch him play week one, it was fantastic. He looked really good. He was running routes. He's beating Derwin James one-on-one. He's beating everybody one-on-one. It didn't matter. So yeah, he's going to be a problem for teams going forward. The Raiders have to find different ways to use him and get him the ball so he could be effective.
Yeah, so last five number one picks for the Raiders: Brock Bowers, Tyree Wilson at number seven, Dylan Parham. He's a third round pick, though. He's not a first round pick. He's just their first pick. Alex Leatherwood, and I liked him, and he did not work out.
Yeah, no.
Henry Ruggs, that's a bad one. And Damon Arnett, which was outside of everybody else's consensus board pick. That was the biggest one. It's the one it should have been the final straw in getting Mayock fired, I would have thought. And then, oh my God, Cleveland Farrell at number four, where he said he tried to trade down. Do you have anything? I said, what's your Raider fan perspective on that particular pick?
Shocking. I remember that day, man. That day shocked me. And just taking him that high, nobody really had him that high. People had him as a first round pick, though, still. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and he's ended to be like a solid player. He's probably going to play a while because he could play the run and he's effective, come off the bench, pass rusher type of guy. But to take him top five, just knowing that, you know, he didn't have the bend to be a top five pick. He didn't have bend. He wasn't very fast either. He didn't do any 40 times or anything like that. And yeah, sure, he's a leader and he has a lot of intangibles, but like taking an edge rusher, you know, and you know, they didn't take like Josh Allen. You know, you look at Josh Allen right now. Josh Allen is one of the best pass rushers in football and he's over at the Jags. And that's somebody the Raiders could have took, right? They didn't take him, right? Or even like Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver is a stud. They didn't take him either. There's a lot of players that they could have took, and they took Cleveland Farrell. That really set back the whole Raiders team, in my opinion, because they had those three first-round picks, and they ended up taking Jonathan Abrams too. You know, and the only one that turned out was Josh Jacobs, and he's gone already. He's with the Packers. So, you know, that's why, you know, watching Brock Bowers play is just refreshing, in my opinion. Like, you know, a lot of Raiders fans wanted them to draft the right tackle, and some are mad about that they didn't. But when you watch Brock Bowers, you know it's a hit. And that's what I'm excited about, is that they have a hit, right? You know, it took a while, but they finally have a hit. And watching him week one, like, he's going to be a stud. Because he even blocked pretty well. That's something that he wasn't really known for coming out of college. And that's what Michael Mayer is, who was their second round pick the year before. And Mayer is still a really good player too. I think Mayer has a lot of upside to him as well. And you expected a lot of 12 personnel this week, but they only ran it 20% of the time. I don't know where that equals out with most of the league, but it was definitely a lower amount than I expected having those two players on the field.
Yeah, it probably is a little more than what the Ravens ran, because they ran a very low total number of heavies in this game, including fullbacks and tight ends. But I want to before we move on to the tight end position, I want to ask about the ex-Raven who retired, and his name is escaping me right now. But you'll tell me. Tall, thin guy.
Yeah, Darren Waller. Are you talking about
Darren Waller? There you go.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about him.
Yeah, Darren Waller, he was amazing when he was here. You know, I think he came and he changed his whole career. I think John Gruden was great for him. John Gruden really knew how to use him. And, you know, Gruden is very underrated as an offensive pass caller. You know, run game, it's kind of ugly. But as a pass caller and those pass designs, John Gruden's in the lab all day. And he really found ways to get him in Darren Waller and Derek Carr really to work together. And, you know, Waller was a choice route stud with Gruden. He was just so great on those choice routes. You could mix it up, slants, stops, whatever. He was great on those. And then sometimes they'd mix it up into a choice route and a go. So it was pretty amazing.
All right, let's keep moving on. Well, wide receiver core, tell us about, you know, what each brings to the table.
So with the wide receiver core, I think this is probably one of the best parts of the Raiders. You know, of course, you got Davante Adams. Davante Adams, probably one of the best route runners in football. I think last year he got injured really early on. A lot of the hits, I mean, if you watch the receiver show, the hits were adding up to him. So there's a lot of times where he was getting stopped a lot more than usual. But you saw it this last week. He's back to normal and he's a stud. Definitely needs to get more targets there. I think one of the most underrated wide receivers on the team is Trey Tucker. Trey Tucker has great releases. You can't press Trey. If you press Trey Tucker, he's so strong and he has a great release with an arm over that he's going to go right past you and he can run a 4-3. It's not very smart to press him. And if you can get him lined up one-on-one on some safeties and stuff like that, it's going to be a long day for that safety in the inside if you can get him on some good routes. He had a really good route against the Chargers, and he catches everything too. He has really great hands, really great player. Another underrated wide receiver too.
Almost always in the slot for him.
Not always in a slot. They do like to line him up outside because he can win outside. And that's the thing that, you know, when he played at Cincinnati, he was slot primarily. And that's when you thought when you drafted him that was going to happen. But what he showed is that he could win outside against press coverage. And that's something in the NFL that you really got to like is somebody that can come in and win outside like that when they're playing in the slot, and especially being that small and that type of, I would say, speed that he has, it makes him really deadly outside. If you can get that one-on-one and you see him and there's no safety on top of him, you got to go there because it's a good chance he's going to win over there. And then Jacoby Myers, underrated player too. I think Jacoby Myers, he's just so steady. You know, I think he's got like 900 yards every year in his career. It's probably the same stat line. You go look at it, it's like 906, 907, 908. It's kind of the same thing. And he's just a steady player that he's going to make plays for you every once in a while. So they have a really good receiving core over there, I believe. And that's why you saw Gardner Minshew have some good stats. I mean, he was 33 for 25 this last week. And the reason because of that is he has about three or four guys, and you include the tight ends, that can win against one-on-one coverage. So there's a lot for Minshew to work with, but he's just got to be able to make those throws to these guys. Because Myers, Adams, Tucker, that's a really good three wide receiver group that you could have. And, you know, a lot of teams would like to have that type of group.
All right. Well, terrific. And in the backfield, who do they have? They use the fullback very often?
Oh, no, they don't have a fullback on the roster. Their fullback is most of the time is Brock Bowers is the fullback. Okay. If you're going to see something, Brock Bowers is going to – that's what I hope to see more of this week is Brock Bowers getting in more in that play action. They made play action about four times last week, which is something that I really didn't like. You know, especially with the two play action passes that they completed, they went one for 23, the other one for 26. You want to see more play action from this week, but they don't have a fullback right now. The running backs though are right now is Zamir White and Alex Mattison. Zamir White definitely is a player that, you know, he was very consistent to end the year last year. I think last week they kind of got away from the running game, in my opinion, and he didn't get enough carries to kind of keep going. And when he was starting to get some movement, they kind of just got away from the run game, in my opinion. And he's one of those players that he could break one at any point. So you might get 2 or 3 yards, but he's always moving forward. You're never going to see him lose yards because he's such a big guy. He's always falling forward. That's what I really like about him. He always plays behind his pads. And, you know, the scheme right now is more zone, and I don't know how much he fits that because Josh McDaniels is pure power. He ran a lot of power at Georgia, and he was more of a fit for that. He's more of a gap scheme runner. So they have added in some more gap with him and then run more zone with Alex Mattison because Mattison comes from Kevin O'Connell and those guys, and they're pure wide zone for the most part. You know, they're mixing some power every once in a while. But, you know, going from Josh McDaniels type of play caller to James Craig and Luke Getsy, who like to run the wide zone, it's a little bit different for Zamir White and kind of question how he fits in there. But I thought he looked pretty good, and they ran a lot of duo and power with him this past week, so I expect more of that this week. But he's a guy who could break one at any point. He ran a 4-4 coming out of college. He's a big guy. Like I said, he always is falling forward. Vision is a little iffy sometimes, but when he hits that hole and he has some good blocking, man, he can be hard to stop, and that's why he got so many 100-yard games last year.
All right. So the one thing I noticed about the Raiders is they ran the ball 22 times last week and only had 4 missed tackles. That's low. I'll call it. Is that, you think that is a more generalizable problem with this team, or you think they find the right opponent, they're going to break a ton of tackles because they have natural elusiveness and power and contact balance and whatnot in level 2?
Yes. The thing is, like, that makes sense to me, having that, because Zamir White is more like a yards after contact type of player. He's not really elusive. Like, he's not going to make a guy miss an open field. He's going to try to run you over, and you got to kind of grab him. He maybe get some yards after contact, because some of the broken tackles he had last week were more about him guys bouncing off him than him actually making guys miss. He's just not that type of back. He's not very elusive, and, you know, he can't really create by himself. So he does need help himself from the offensive line. You know, and Alex Mattison, you know, throughout his career, he never was really that guy where he's going to make you miss or anything like that. So it is an element that the Raiders are missing right now on offense is somebody that can actually kind of, you know, take the reins and just make plays as a running back. You know, just throw a screen to them, you're going to make some plays. And I know Mattison had that long touchdown, but he ended up jumping over somebody instead of actually making dodging people and being elusive. So yeah, so that's the thing with them. It's just not they're more, especially Zamir White is more like a bruiser back than he is a make you miss type of guy, be elusive in the open field.
All right. Well, very good. Any common player formation that shows up a lot for the Raiders? Anything they concept wise they really like to do? Raiders, I think I said, yeah.
Yeah. At this point, you know, I think with the concepts wise, you know, they run a lot of mesh right now. They ran a lot of mesh this past game, a lot of mesh. It was more of a simpler package this game. So you saw a lot of sticks, you know, if you're familiar with the sticks concept, a lot of stuff like that, sticks concepts. Because Luce gets these real, when he really gets into what he likes to do is a lot of deep concepts. So you see a lot of deep post. You saw some dagger this past week with some of the concepts that you saw, but he really likes to run those double posts and things like that, and likes to mix it up with some of the motions and mixing up with Trey Tucker and getting him on a lot of those pre-snap motions.
Okay, so, on this show, I always talk about the mesh point when I'm talking about Lamar and Derrick Henry. It means something completely different, but explain the mesh concept in a passing game.
Yeah, so the mesh concept is basically it's kind of two, I would say, drag routes kind of, and they basically kind of create a pick in the middle. So when you're playing against zone, right, if you're especially against like a quarters team or even cover three, I mean, basically you try to.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Find that hole in between the mesh, and if it's man to man is when it really works, because somebody might get caught up in the mesh if they're running it really correctly. Like one player is going to get caught up and it's going to create an opening for somebody else. And especially what he did this last week, what a lot of college football teams do is they add the wheel to it, which Chip Kelly made famous. You add the wheel to that, which kind of adds a different element to it and gives the quarterback a lot of options to throw to. So that's something he did last week. He actually did it with Michael Mayer. It was interesting. He had Michael Mayer on the wheel, had Devontae Adams and Trey Tucker on the mesh. So he is mixing it up a little bit with some of those concepts. But, you know, it was a lot of basic stuff this week, and maybe they're just trying to lean into it, like a lot of Hank, which Hank is a curl flats, things like that. So, yeah, it wasn't too crazy schematically this week with the concepts, but it was interesting this week. That's what I would say.
I'll just say for Ravens fans, if you think back the last time that I can really recall a mesh concept play where it was in the middle of the field, a cross was in the middle of the field, 2017 season opener against Cincinnati when Jeremy Maclin had the mesh play. It was off Watson, I think was the tight end who got him free. He was really excited about it as it happened. Just not something the Ravens have really made part of the game. And honestly, I think part of that is with Lamar Jackson, it's not necessarily a play that you're trying to make happen. Lamar Jackson likes to see the receiver break open. Yeah. And it really, it's probably a little bit more it has some element of that. I don't want to say it's not entirely not that, but it's really, yeah. He's much more about seeing a receiver break open, which is why he's got this disconnect with Rashad Bateman.
Yeah. 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 Especially, you know, Lamar, I mean, that's something he has to work on. It is the anticipation with him. I mean, you want to see him anticipate more and be more of that quarterback that way and kind of instead of waiting for things to open. And because that would really take him as his next step as a passer is the anticipation. So you're right about that. Him waiting in. Yeah. Because when you're doing mesh, you are anticipating that somebody's going to be open, right? I mean, one of these guys, you got to see the middle, you got to see the zone and know that somebody's going to hit that zone. And especially, I mean, if it's man, it's a lot easier, but when it's against zone, you got to be able to see which player is going to hit that zone and anticipate what they're going to do right there, especially as in the NFL. I mean, anticipation is king for quarterbacks, so that's a big thing.
All right, let's move over to the defensive side. I want to talk about one other thing. So okay. in game one, the Ravens got exposed at inside linebacker with really some coverage situations that were not ideal. And I think, you know, this is a team obviously that likes to throw the football because that's where a lot of their assets are in the Raiders. It's a Ravens defense that is extraordinarily strong at corner and at safety, but has inside linebackers that now will be the focal point of the passing game, I presume. How would you expect the Raiders to attack that?
So I think that's where you're going to see a lot of Brock Bowers. You know, one thing Luke Getsy does really well is he does find a player to attack, and he attacks that player. You know, if you watch him last year with the Bears, I mean, if he found a weakness or a player that he felt like he can, kind of exploit a little bit, he's going to do that. And what they're going to do, they're probably going to move around Brock Bowers a lot and probably do more 12 personnel this week, I would hope, and move Brock Bowers around and get him those one-on-ones, especially on some choice routes and things like that on some of those linebackers. Or, you know, some of the plays that they like to run off play action, you know, kind of get those linebackers to commit to something and then have him break back outside. And so, you know, that's what Luke Getsy does really well. He loves to attack players' weaknesses. He likes to attack one player the whole game, even with his run game designs. If he feels like there's a guy who can't stop the run, and there's a guy that he could focus on, he's going to focus on that guy. That means if there's a guy outside that can't play the run, he's going to do a lot of crack tosses. That's something that we didn't see much this week because, you know, just week one, there's really no film. I mean, you're kind of just guessing. But you're going to see more of him attacking certain players as we go along. And that's why I expect there's just a lot of Michael Mayer and them attacking them and probably even find ways to get Davante Adams inside where he's on those linebackers too, which will make it a big problem for them.
All right, let's move over to the defensive side. Lots I want to talk about. What I'd always like to start the defensive conversation is, what's the Raiders' most common look on passing downs? So the high leverage plays, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, most early downs, the defense has their personnel dictated to them by the offense. But on third down, you have choices. Mm-hmm. What do they like to go to on that down?
Right now, it's a lot of cover three. Last year, they were very high in cover three, about 30% of the time. And the reason for that is you got to go back to kind of the Gruden era with the draft and rather players around, because we had Gus Bradley here, right? So Gus Bradley, who's, you know, probably the cover three maestro of the league, right? He's been running cover three since 2006, maybe. Kind of hasn't really changed it up too much. And he's brought in a lot of players to play his cover three scheme, like Nate Hobbs, Divine Diablo, Trayvon Morig, all those guys were all signed but drafted during Gus Bradley's one season with the Raiders to come in and play his cover three scheme. So when Patrick Graham first came over to the Raiders, he was more of a too high guy, right? And they did a lot too high year one, but I kind of feel like he just kind of figured it out. And last year, they went primarily cover three. Like against the Chiefs, they played three buzz like the whole game. They basically just showed too high and they came down. Mark Sepps came right down. They're playing three buzz the whole game. And that's really what they like to stick to. And you saw a lot of that this past game. And the second coverage they play the most is cover two. They really stay away from man a lot. You don't see them play man that much. And it's mostly, you might see a little bit more this year because maybe they feel like they got some corners that could play man, like Jack Jones. And, you know, Ja'Quarian Bennett, he had a really good game last week. And he's going into his second year, so maybe they may feel more comfortable playing man. But right now, if it's third down, you would expect some kind of exotic cover three, whether it's like cover three Mabel or something like that, or those type of coverages.
Okay. And that's coverage is of course half the story. The other part is package. Tell me about their committed nickel team. Do they have a dime back they bring in? What do they do on third down?
So mostly it's nickel. They like to stick with nickel. You don't see a lot of dime from them. You don't see a lot of where there's you know, those that many DBs on the field. They're going to stick with nickel.
Any rotation at the weak side linebacker or any of the three linebackers to bring on different ones for passing downs?
Not really. Not at this point. Not even last year. Last year you just saw basically the same linebackers. There's not really a lot of rotation there. They like putting Spillane and Diablo out there and having that. If you see something and you see a dime, it would probably be Isaiah Polamalu coming in as a safety, and you know him coming in and maybe playing in the slot a little bit. They like to bring more safeties in to bring in more corners or more linebackers and mix it up that way. But they like to have the two linebackers on the field and stay in nickel. Even when you know they bring in and they go into maybe a tight front or more over front to stop the run, you're still going to see those two linebackers out there. They're not going to bring in more different linebackers. They're probably just going to bring in more defensive linemen in and kind of stick to that nickel look. So there's a lot of nickel. You're going to see Nate Haas in the slot, Jacorian Bennett on the outside, and Jack Jones on the other side. And then, you know, if they do rotate, it's going to be Isaiah Polamalu coming in and rotating with some of the safeties, or even if they – If they do go dime, it's going to be Polamalu coming in. It's not going to be like another corner or anything like that. So because they trust Polamalu to cover. Like if, let's say, Nate Hobbs went down, they'd probably trust him to come in and play a slot corner a little bit. And he's an undrafted free agent from the USC. He's really showed himself and kind of created a role for himself on this football team. But yeah, they like to keep those two linebackers out there. There's not a lot of switching. You're not going to see it's going to be mostly Robert Spillane and Divine Diablo playing most of the snaps. You're not going to see like some other backup guys that have. Maybe you might see some Tommy Eichenberg this week. He's from Ohio State. They really like Tommy Eichenberg. So maybe if there is some rotation, it would be Tommy Eichenberg coming in. But for the most part, you don't see that much rotation from the linebackers.
Okay, fair enough. Spillane, the Ravens fans know him from his time with the Steelers, so that'll be interesting. He's been pretty good. He's been, you know, a player who's probably overachieved in the National Football League so far in his career. All right, so let's talk about the defensive line. Start there. I know that's really where a lot of the strength of the Raiders are. And looking at some of the things that happened, certainly against the Chargers, who I think scheme wise you're going to find are fairly similar to the Ravens in terms of at least one thing they can do well. But this defensive line, if it gets pierced, leaves some questionable tackling behind it. But let's start at the defensive line first in terms of the strength there.
Yeah. So, yeah, across the line, they're the heart of the defense, right? I mean, Christian Wilkins, Max Crosby, even like Adam Butler, John Jenkins. And, you know, they don't have Tyree Wilson right now this week. And then Malcolm Kuntz is hurt. But Janarius Robinson had a really good game this past week. And then they have another guy named Charles Snowden that kind of comes in. And then they just picked up Chaisson, who was drafted out of LSU a couple years back.
Yeah, I remember.
Jaguars, I believe. Yeah. So they kind of picked him up the practice squad. So I expect him to see him a little bit this week. But across the board in the defensive line, they have some really good players. I mean, Adam Butler is really underrated. He's getting better against the run this year. He had a really good game this past week, but he can rush the passer. That's one thing he can do, is he can rush the passer as a defensive tackle. And you got Christian Wilkins, who was a monster against the Chargers. He just dominated the whole game. And Trey Pipkins probably have a nightmare still about how he played against him, because he's just a monster in the run game, and he's great at setting up stunts for his teammates. Like a lot of things Christian Wilkins does, like he doesn't always have the highest sack number, but like he's great at setting up a stunt and then you seeing his teammate get the sack, and then he's the unsung hero of the play, and he doesn't get the praise or like whatever that maybe you would see from most defensive tackles who collect those sacks. But he's such a team player like that, and he's relentless with a relentless motor. And then of course Max Crosby, who I think is the best edge run defender in football. I think there's not a better edge run defender, you know, and as a pass rusher, I think there's at times where you can stop Max just because he plays so many snaps. And I think he's human. I know he has this crazy motor, but there's at times where he can get tired and things like that. But as a pass rusher, I think he can be controlled a little bit at times. Some tackles are going to just have a really bad day against him, but some tackles are going to be able to control him a little bit. So,
all right, that's obviously one of the Ravens' big weaknesses was at right tackle this last week. They split the snaps between two guys, and both of them had failing scores as I scored it in terms of block-by-block scoring. McCary allowed parts of five pressures plus three others that Lamar ran him out of, and they did that in only – I guess it was 60 snaps, but it was less than that in terms of scored snaps. Not to get too in the weeds about this, but I think it ended up being about 55, 57 snaps in that range. And then Rosengarten gave up a sack on his first NFL play, and one where the problem was compounded. He knocked the ball free, actually, after he got beat by Chris Jones. So do you see any hope? I mean, all our other shows are working on how do you stop Max Crosby? How do you double team him? How do you use read option? How do you use play action? How do you use all these things to basically take him out of the play?
Yeah, I'll be more worried about Christian Wilkins this week because just the way he played last week, man, he was unstoppable. Like even the long run that their Chargers got to end the game, and we'll talk about the linebackers in a second. That was not on him. You know, he did his job right, and you know, Dobbins made a great run, but yeah, Crosby is gonna get his for sure, especially in the run game. He's just a monster, and you know, the right tackle is gonna have a long day with him too. It's not gonna be a great day. I mean, you're gonna have to have some of the best tackles that in football to really stop him, but you know, Wilkins is gonna you know, 77 Falele, I think is how you say his name. He's gonna have a rough day, in my opinion. I think it's gonna be a lot of kind of similar how Chris Jones looked, because Wilkins was just, his film was crazy last week. It's really hard to explain how well he played. Like, he was just dominating and tossing guys around and being just disruptive. Half the time, like, you worry about the linebackers, but he was making all the tackles in the run game. So it was just crazy to watch him dominate like that.
Wilkins usually line up directly next to Crosby?
Yeah. Okay, they didn't move him at all, really.
That's a very tough double to deal with on the right side, and particularly if those guys are both ISO'd on the edge and at three. Now, you do have a tight end that typically lines up on that side for the Ravens. Not always, but more often than not on that right side. Okay, that's very interesting and obviously bad. Falele, actually, he looks terrible out there playing the position. And I'm not claiming the guy's a good player or anything, but the results in his first week were very good. And it's really a strange disconnect on the offensive line to have a player who looks terrible, but the results are good. It's just weird. I mean,
that's the beauty of film, though. That's the beauty of like film and all 22 is you watch the narrative kind of doesn't match what the actual film says. Right. So yeah.
Right. And we have a big disconnect in this town because there's some people who are film guys and they really want to point out individual plays. And it reminds me of talking to anybody about fielding in baseball in the 1980s is all they want to talk about is one individual play. And I'm like, okay, we're going to judge him by his one best play. We're going to judge him by all of them because offensive line plays a hits per at bat profession.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a, you know, how you do the scouting academy is into traits based stuff. So I was wondering, it kind of ends up being a discussion sometimes. And I really do get it more when you're evaluating college players coming to the NFL and trying to project their traits and see if it'll work. I get it more in those circumstances. I don't get it all at the NFL level because the playing field is essentially leveled again in terms of what you're facing. And to the degree you can adjust for who you're facing, but I really don't get the notion of judging people by their longest home run or their best fielding play.
Yeah, me either. I never understand that. People love to do that, like one play, and then the guy's a bad player. But then, like the rest of it, if he's especially offensive line, because most of the time when you're watching film, it might not even be his fault, right? Some of those plays, like it might be expecting help or something like that, and you watch it on the TV, and it's like, oh my god, he made a bad block, but like maybe he was expecting something different, and it's more detailed, especially the offensive line play.
And even when it is completely his fault, as it was in Falele's case, really this last week, you're allowed a certain number of errors per game. It's a frequency and severity of errors, you know, job that we do in grading offensive lines. Anyway, I don't want to go to a soapbox for too long. I want you to get back and talk a little bit about the linebacker position, the off-ball guys, and what they do for the Raiders.
Yeah, so I mean, Robert Spillane has really taken the next step as a linebacker. Like when they signed him originally from the Steelers, he was more known as like just a run first guy. Just go in there and take on guards and stuff like that. But he's really shown really well playing in zone coverage. He had three interceptions last year, I believe, and he really took the next step with his ability to play in coverage last season. And I thought that that's what really excites you. And then he had another good game to start this week. You know, he definitely was more physical than he was last year. I think he had an injury late in the season, so he wasn't able to be as physical as he could be. But he's back to being a really physical player, just taking on guards and, you know, making them pay when they come at him, you know, and that's really what you want from your linebacker. But his growth as a pass coverage linebacker is what really shines, because he's he's good in zone at this point. I'm not going to learn to regret. I would say he's a good zone player, but he knows where he needs to be. And if you make a mistake as a quarterback, he's going to read it. He's going to get a pick. So that's what you really like about him. Now, Divine Diablo, he is a safety converting to linebacker. And the conversion is still to feel like it's not working. We're about like what, year four, maybe year five of this conversion. And it's not working. It's not a thing. And you know, the big run with J.K. Dobbins last week was really on Divine Diablo. And he basically tried to shoot a gap really early. And if he was patient and just kind of just waited, he would have been there to make the tackle. But he shot a gap that he shouldn't have shot. And here goes Dobbins, who's a really patient back. He hits the gap that he's supposed to hit, and he's going off for 70. And that's a lot of things with Diablo. And then the missed tackles that come with it. It's just something that you're not really excited about. He's still kind of lost in coverage sometimes too. Like, you know, they play a lot of cover three, and you play a lot of these coverages, and you know, especially when Graham likes to mix it up, he's not gonna always just show pure cover three. He's gonna show something first and then mix up something else. He always is in the wrong spot. So it's weird to watch him.
So I watched the Dobbins run, and Diablo didn't have a good day for missed tackles in this, but I was actually surprised. I just looked back here that career-wise, he's actually been a very good tackler. It's really, yeah. It really has been a more of a coverage problem for him at linebacker. It's very unusual. You convert a safety to linebacker, you're typically going to have a problem with tackles before you're going to have a problem with coverage.
Yeah, it's super interesting because it always felt like that he was just always kind of lost in zone coverage. Like it still feels that way. And that's what you're worried about. It's like, how long is this linebacker experiment going to work? Like, do you move you to safety? Do you play more safety now? I don't even know if he could play safety at this point, you know, so it gets interesting.
So you're scouting at Academy background. I want to kind of go back into this, and I'm wondering if this ever comes up either during the educational stuff you do, and or maybe it's at a more fundamental level, but safety to linebacker conversions are not that unusual, particularly in the NFL as defenses try and get faster and whatnot. But also the other thing that's taken over the NFL in a lot of ways is use of the dime back. And, you know, replacing that guy, having a weak side linebacker, for a lot of reasons, it's better to have multiple players doing that job than one great player because of economies you get in terms of salary, in terms of injury protection and whatnot. But I guess, are you of the opinion, generally speaking, that your third best coverage safety is almost always going to be better than your second best coverage linebacker, including zone concepts as they come down? Do you find those skills to be portable, or do you think it's not uncommon to see what we've seen with Diablo, where the coverage side of it is gone when he moves from safety to linebacker?
Because, you know, I think it you would expect the safety to be there to be the better dime linebacker. Mm-hmm. And for most teams, it does end up that way. Mm-hmm. But I think for some guys who play safety like he did at Virginia Tech, where like he was a box safety kind of, but he also was mixed up a little bit at free safety too, to play a lot of free, that when you get into those areas, like, and you have to play like a curl flat, or you have to be a hook player, or you have to be a different things that you weren't doing when you're in college, it becomes a little bit of a different look as a linebacker. Because a lot of the guys who play dime linebacker these days like played a lot of like slot coverage and stuff like that in college. Those are a lot of the guys who were blitzing, those type of guys. And that's why they like Polamalu out there, because that's what Polamalu did in college. So he can get to the flat, or he can know and understand, I'm going to play hook here. So it's those type of things.
The hook is the interesting one, but it really is broader than that in terms of linebackers being able to drop deep. And the thing I've seen more frequently than not is that a guy who comes from safety has portable skills about understanding how the play develops behind a linebacker. Whereas linebackers, when they have to learn that from first principles and have always played just linebacker, very much more difficult, much later in the learning process for them. But a safety coming down, if he's played there for 4 years in college and whatnot, he has a much better idea of where those routes are, where that receiver is going to be behind him, which is
That's what makes it, like, it makes no sense with Diablo why he's so bad in coverage sometimes. It just makes no sense. But that's what it is. Like, he literally, I remember this one play, his first year with Gus Bradley, that like he was you know, because sometimes in cover three, especially with the way Gus Bradley plays it, you got to take that an over route. Usually that linebacker, he carries it, and he just couldn't find the players. And you're thinking like, well, you used to play safety, you should be able to go with the over route. Like, it should be easy for you to be able to turn your hips and kind of just go over the over route. I mean, that's what Bobby Wagner made. He basically made the Hall of Fame playing that like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, you expected Diablo to be able to do it, and he couldn't do it. So it's just weird dynamic too. And you know, he struggles in coverage against tight ends too. It's been pretty odd.
Okay. Well, definitely a matchup there for the Ravens. Take us through the secondary now.
Yeah, so the secondary, they really a really good game. It was probably like the issue that, you know, had going into the season, like, you know, because outside of like Nate Hobbs and Jack Jones, it's like, who's going to be the other guy? Jacorian Bennett really has showed a lot in camp, and you know, they have a great understanding of the zone coverage that Patrick Graham has to do, especially with the safeties. I think, you know, Morig and Epps, they didn't have the best game tackling this past game, but when it comes to understanding what Patrick Graham wants to do and how they want to move, he's very versatile with them. Sometimes you'll see Epps in the box. Sometimes you'll see Morig in the box. Jack Jones is a ball hawk outside. And he, especially when they're playing cover three, he does a good job of baiting people into certain throws where he can get some picks. And you saw that, especially last year against the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. He did a really good job of that. And he's so athletic that he can flip his hips really quick and his great transitions. He's going to transition out of his back pedal or he's an inside position or like a sidestep.
Yeah, exactly.
So when he's in those motions, he transitions really well out of it. And then Nate Hobbs inside, I think he's one of the better slot corner. I'm not gonna say best, but one of the better slot corners in the NFL. Definitely because he can blitz, he tackles really well. So if you have to need him to play the run, he can play the run too. So you can stay in nickel, especially get some better passing teams. You don't have to get out of nickel because you know Nate Hobbs can play inside. He can play the run. Sometimes in coverage, he can be a little bit hit and miss. But, you know, he has gotten better at coverage as it's gone along. But those guys in the back end, they work really well together. That's just one thing I'll say about them. They communicate really well back there. You don't see, like, bad mistakes from them at this point. You don't see, like, guys just running wide open by himself. You're not going to see those type of things because they work really well together. They communicate really well, which is why I like Marcus Epps. And, you know, really one of the things I really like about him is how he's a great communicator in the back end. And he gets those guys. He's like a captain back there. So he's not going to maybe make the sexy plays that everybody likes, but he's going to get those guys set up, and they're going to be in the right positions to make the right plays. And that's why you saw Justin Herbert, you know, he definitely had to check it down a lot because you're going to see those guys rotating and they're going to be in the right spots at all the right times. So definitely a lot to work with in the back end.
All right. Great stuff. So flip this around to how they defend the Ravens here for a second. And the one thing that keeps coming out of any preview shows, any review shows of that Chiefs game was leaning on the mesh point more with Lamar and Henry, whether that means read option or that means just even threatening for the mesh to be there and going play action off it. How do you expect the Raiders to try and defend it?
Yeah, I think, you know, what they're going to try to do, I think they're going to try kind of like attack Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying that, you know, Patrick Graham, you know, is like Gus Bradley, but I just remember the last time they played the Ravens, that's how they attacked. They had Max not even try to worry about the running back. He's just going to attack Lamar Jackson and make Lamar Jackson give that ball up, or he's going to have to try to make work against Max Crosby. And I think that's how they're going to attack it. They're going to use Max and his athleticism against Lamar and try to make Lamar give that ball up at the mesh point. They're not going to give him the chance to even keep that ball. They're going to attack Lamar and they're going to hope that the guys inside can stop Derrick Henry and the running backs that way. I think that's how they're going to attack it. You know, cause I mean, there are different ways to attack the mesh point, like, you know, having the linebacker scoop on over the top. And, you know, they do a lot of those. They did a little bit of that the last time they played him, but the time before it was basically Max. I'm going to attack Lamar Jackson. I expect that. I expect him to kind of just be on full mode. I'm going to take on Lamar myself and make him give that ball up. Because if I even try to play that running back or try to, you know, go after the running back, he's going to keep it. And who knows what's going to happen. So they're going to try to keep contained and make Lamar give that ball up and not let him beat them. I think that's going to be their goal, and have kind of Max just kind of attack him over and over. And just as soon as he sees that mesh point, he's going after Lamar. It doesn't matter who they hand the ball off to and have the guys in the back end behind him. They're going to have to make the plays and have to stop Derrick Henry. And maybe might open some things up, but you don't want Lamar running all over you. And especially especially with how, you know, some of the linebackers are playing this week, you don't want to get Lamar on the second level or how they were tackling. So they're going to have Max kind of attack that mesh point for sure.
I would
attack Lamar Jackson.
I would think you wouldn't want Henry in level two with the Raiders tacklers and at inside linebacker or at safety either. But anyway, is what it is. All right. Well, fantastic talking to you, Marcus. One thing I like to do, I don't like to do score predictions. I've always found that to be kind of, I don't know.
Me too.
Yeah. But give us one player on each side of the ball that you think matches up well against the Ravens for the Raiders.
I think Brock Bowers is going to match up really well. I think Brock Bowers is going to be a problem. I think they're going to try to attack with Bowers, especially inside, especially if they can, you know, move him around a little bit and especially use him out of the backfield. I think they're going to try to get the ball in his hands a lot, especially after this past game. And they were able to show that he has the ability to handle a lot of things and handle different routes. And he could be in line, he could be outside, he could work inside against man coverage. I think they're going to try to find different ways to get him the football. And I think he's going to be a little bit of a matchup problem for the Ravens and literally for the league, in my opinion. And I think on defense, I think this is going to be a big game for, I think, like Adam Butler. Adam Butler okay. is somebody that I think is going to have a big game just because – you know, they're going to be really worried about Christian Wilkins after watching this film against the Chargers. They're going to be really worried about him. And then, of course, they're going to be worried about Max Crosby. And I think it's going to open a lot of things up for Adam Butler. And Adam Butler, he looks really good. He looked good in the preseason. He looked really good week one. And he's a great pass rusher. And he's playing better against the run. So I expect him to be able to make some plays on defense this week.
Okay. Now, Adam Butler has a history with the Baltimore Ravens. He was on the Miami team when they got 40 cover zero looks in the loss there on a Thursday night in 2021. Butler dropped the cover in that game. Now, Butler's a nose tackle, defensive tackle, but they dropped the cover 18 times in that game. 18 times in one football game for an interior defensive lineman.
Wow.
Off the charts. Marcus, a complete pleasure having you on. I think we hit on at the top of the show on a lot of places you are. Is there any one project you want to direct people to if they want to just see the best thing that you do?
Yeah, Taped Don't Lie is the best thing I do. Me and Matt Holder, we do a lot of great work. Like I said, we grind the film. We do a very extensive breakdowns too. So check that out. We're going to be doing a preview this week. So we're going to be deep diving into the Ravens film ourselves. I'm going to be doing the defense. He's going to be looking at the offense. And then we basically game plan off that. I'm going to give you a game plan of how we expect the Raiders to attack them and how to stop them on offense and defense. So yeah, we do a lot of extensive work there. So definitely check that out at Taped Don't Lie on YouTube and everywhere you get podcasts.
All right. Well, thanks very much for coming on, Marcus. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Like to hear how folks are feeling about Know Your Foe. It's been going on for now for about 6 or 7 years. Tell me some things you'd like to hear differently. The format is usually the same in terms of how I handle it. If there's something different you want to hear, let me know about that. I really am interested in hearing your thoughts. Marcus, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them. Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.